Hi, everyone. I'm Anita Lustria, and in my world, conversation is king. A number of years ago, when I lost my big job of being a radio talk show host, I decided I could mope around and be sad. Okay, I did a bunch of that. Or I could move on and start a podcast so I could keep the conversation going. That's how this podcast was born. As you listen, you'll hear about things that are important to me, and hopefully you'll resonate with these topics as well. Welcome to Faith Conversations. Welcome to the podcast. I'm excited to have two guests across the kitchen table from me today. Often I'm Skyping with a guest, but today these two are in the flesh. So I'm really pleased to have Michelle Van Loon at the table. Hi, Michelle.
Hello. I'm back. Me and all my words.
That's great. Me and all my words. Excellent. And Mike Murphy, my husband, sitting here. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
You're back, too.
I am, surprisingly.
I was waiting for you to have some good line like Michelle did, me and all my words. I thought, what were you going to say?
I'm going to search for the Holy Grail.
Well, there you go.
Go ahead and top that, yeah. Mike. Go ahead.
Yeah. That's great. I think I will find it.
And for those that have not been regular listeners to the podcast, maybe you just found the podcast recently because you tuned in for a favorite guest or something. Michelle, who are you? I know you as a friend and an author. Just tell what you've written and, yeah, a little bit about yourself.
Oh.
Whatever person loves, right?
Let's see. I am an author because I do have a lot of words and they need to go someplace and be concentrated and be edited. Because when I talk, there's just no telling what might come out. So,
and you just turned in a book manuscript.
I did just turn it in a book manuscript
about
spiritual formation at midlife.
Yay.
And the title is Becoming Sage, Cultivating something purpose. I'm bad with the subtitle, so this is super awkward.
It's
called Becoming Sage, and you know, there's a part of me that sometimes knows that they may change,
sure,
especially subtitles,
yes,
along the way.
So that's okay.
So my heart isn't completely connected to it, but it's about midlife,
nice,
spiritual growth and
coming out when?
Coming out next spring.
Great.
So, oh, okay. I know. Yeah.
That sounds nice. Like a chapter in a cookbook.
Yeah.
Becoming Sage.
I know. Okay. I know. What would my next one be if it was a food related one, which I could also imagine. Ooh,
yes.
But I have a book on pilgrimage and exile, and that is called Born to Wander, which I'm very proud of, a book on the Jewish feasts and the Christian calendar, and a book on regret. Those, so they don't seem like they all have something in common, but they kind of, one kind of leads to the other, at least in my head.
And that's all that matters.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right.
It'll all make sense when the movie comes out.
Yeah. Oh, Reese Witherspoon, yeah. I'm waiting for you to want to play me in the movie. Come on, girl.
It's great. I love it. All right. So, Mike, what about you?
Am an author. I have boxes of books somewhere around here. I don't even have boxes anymore. But I do write. I write something,
yes,
on Facebook every week, mm-hmm, that some people just love and infuriates others. So that's fun.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good for my ego at times. And it makes me feel sad at times because people hate me. But, but I'm
called Mike's Friday Rumblings.
I'm a retired pastor, but I still do spiritual direction,
oh,
which I really,
right,
enjoy,
yep,
and have some clients. And they're young and old and just really fascinating people that I get to help listen to their story and talk to them about God in the midst of it. It's
nice.
Really wonderful.
Nice. Can I just say something about those Friday rumblings? Because I have so many words that some of them need to go in that direction. If you are looking for something to kind of provoke your thought or start a conversation or just kind of give you a way to think differently about the world. You may not agree with every word that Mike writes. That's not the point.
Right.
The point is to think and to love God with your mind.
Thank you.
So I celebrate them. I look for them every Friday, and there's usually one that will inspire me. There's usually one that will convict me, and the rest just get me thinking.
Right. So. And now that you're our neighbor, you could say, this one I got to talk to Mike about. Because I really think he's out to lunch
right.
on this one.
Because now I live here. I'm low-hanging fruit right here in the neighborhood.
You're just on the street. By the way, we are recruiting people to come and live in our neighborhood.
Yes, we are.
We're importing friends.
We are.
And we can come down, and between us, we can give you a beautiful view of Sarasota, the Sun Coast. And it's a great place to live.
It's so far so good.
Michelle, now that you're here, I've not talked to you about this. So, of course, I should talk to you about it on a recording.
Yes.
For perpetuity. Well, you can't say no. But you and I, we could put together a retreat down here.
We could.
You know, but you
haven't talked to me, but my head is always, always thinking
be something small. You're involved in a larger conference that's happening, too, that I'll give you a little quick commercial on if you want to say something.
This is more words. So I'll just say that I'm working with author Leslie Leland Fields on a couple of gatherings, not a true conference, smaller than the fill up a stadium and just sit there and passively receive. These two gatherings are targeted at women at midlife and beyond, and so we'll have keynote speakers, but also workshops and time to reflect and time to connect with other women, because that's where the wisdom comes, is in these conversations that we have.
Yes,
so true. They're formatted a little bit differently, but go to wonderyearsgathering.com and you can see who's going to be facilitating these events, and registration will be opening soon. Commercial over.
And I'll put that in the show notes too. People know they can find stuff there.
May I ask a question? How do you determine if you're in midlife or not? Is there an age frame for that?
Isn't that 40 and up?
Well, that's the 45 kind and up. Of standard age. But I have a friend who is a life coach and has been to seminary. And she said she found herself at midlife in her late 20s after both of her parents had passed.
Okay, so it can be life stage too.
She's an old soul, and a lot of the
kind of
spiritual and emotional tasks that were before her, she got thrown into them kind of before her time chronologically, but it was very formative. So I don't know, 29 or 40 or whatever menopause happens, or when the kids leave the nest, or when your parents die, or
feel middle-aged.
You look in the mirror and go, my mother is looking back at me. What on earth?
Well, this is what I do. I double my age, and if I don't think I'm going to live that long, I know I'm the beyond, midlife or beyond, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, I'm not going to live to 118.
No.
And so I'm in the category midlife and beyond.
And beyond. Emphasis on beyond.
Yeah. That's
maybe,
why.
Maybe I'd a little bit beyond that.
Yeah. Anyway.
Okay. Well.
So thanks, Mike. Hey, I wanted to go back to something you said, Michelle, about Mike's rumblings and causing us to think. And just for a brief minute, maybe let's bat around this thought. I think we are struggling in this day and age to engage our Christian mind. And maybe we've struggled for a long time, but that's one of the things that Mike is encouraging us to do. As you said, agreeing is not the point. Being pressed and challenged to think, I think we do so much escaping that we are not cultivating our Christian mind.
The idea of loving God with our mind it's not necessarily our first go-to. We can love God with our service. we can love God. If we get goosebumps while we're singing worship songs, mm-hmm. we can love God just through duty, through reading our Bible every day. Those good habits that we form, they are good habits. But the idea of holding things in tension, exploring ideas beyond indoctrination to move toward education can feel a little like we're slipping out on thin ice. Mm-hmm. What do you think, Mike?
Yeah, I like that. You know, I think we have to expand our world a little bit. I think a lot of Christians just don't deal with a lot of things in the world. They look at Christian things. They read Christian books, even some Christian novels, and a lot of them aren't really any good. It doesn't expand your way of thinking about things at all. And so I think part of the question for me is, how do you help people to see God in all things? That's a very Jesuit kind of concept. Mm-hmm. You got to see God in all things, which also means then in order to think Christianly, I got to be able to interact with things that aren't necessarily Christian and to discover what they are. And that kind of enlarges my mind a little
bit. Well, and or let me interject this thought to quote Rob Bell, everything is spiritual. There is no secular sacred divide. We are whole beings.
Well, and the other thing is that a lot of times if we meet an idea that we are unfamiliar with, a different faith, a different political position, somebody from another country that has different habits and or cooks different things or whatever it is, our kind of default setting, I think this is kind of an American thing too, is to think, well, we have to win whatever the contest is. We are the winners of this. Right. And so that's not really thinking, that's competing.
Yes.
Thinking is like, can you give an example of what might be the difference between winning and engaging to learn?
Oh, that's great. That's a great question.
Didn't prepare, we're just talking.
I'm thinking immediately, engaging and thinking as opposed to winning is sometimes the back and forth that happens in a conversation. I'm not trying to best you this podcast is an example. I'm not here to try and best either of you in your beautiful wordsmithing or your opinion. I'm just here to hear and understand and ask for clarification and put forth my thoughts. It's a give and take. I guess that's how I view it, as opposed to a besting and a winning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And I think that, and that gets back to the competition thing that we really do. I've got to get my microphone adjusted here, or my mouth on the microphone. Anita always corrects me on that. She can't see it, but she is doing
She's
that.
She's gesturing wildly.
I know. That's just part of what I do.
Here's the thing. I'm very happy that I grew up Roman Catholic. I'm not Roman Catholic right now, but I'm not mad. I think I've said that on the podcast. Mm-hmm. But they were not afraid of intellectualism. Mm-hmm. They were not afraid of looking at ideas. Sometimes they treated people that looked too far to ideas, and they burned them at the stake and things back in the day. But
not good.
Not recommended anymore, especially for a pro-life group. That's not a good thing to do. But I think what's instilled in me is this desire to be curious.
Mm, yes.
And
yes.
If we lose that desire to be curious, even as a Christian, if we look at Scripture and you go, I really don't understand that what that mm-hmm. believes, what I believe here, but then we're afraid to even ask about it because mm-hmm. we're afraid we might get shot down. Whereas, you know, you're a Jewish Christian hybrid kind of person, Michelle. And
that's one way of putting it, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Right.
But this whole thing of midrash and where you talk about it and the rap people, you'd go to Jewish schools and people are arguing with each other about the scripture. And it's really kind of delightful in many respects, because when we argue about something and are curious, we do learn, even if we just go, no.
It's really okay. There is a time to know kind of what the framework for answers is. That's what catechisms are for.
Yes.
That's what early life discipleship is about, is that we need a framework. But if that's the end,
yeah,
and we hang on to that so hard, then I'm not sure we really trust the framework is strong enough to hold us.
I'll give a good example, okay?
Yeah.
So I will often say marrying Mike was one of the best things that happened to me.
I thought it was the best.
Yes, well, but in this specific, Anita. So, you know, Mike, you just mentioned that you're curious. You know, you grew up in a system that allowed you to be curious. Well, I was curious. You know, I knew how to ask questions and good questions and pull things out of people. But I was only curious to a point that I felt comfortable with. I was not okay with the world of ideas. So enter Mike into my picture, who's not afraid of the world of ideas, grew up differently than I did. And so my world has expanded so that I'm not afraid to ask bigger, deeper, broader questions. And have I changed and grown and become a little bit different person? I mean, the core of who I am certainly is not altered, but of course, that's all part of life and growth. And I'm grateful for Mike for coming along and instilling these things in me or introducing them to me. And I just went further down the road with it than I was okay with going before, because I thought, oh, I have to stop here. It was part of how I had grown up.
Mm-hmm. Right, inside the framework.
Yes.
Right. Inside the framework. I grew up in a family of lots of arguing and so many opinions, and it was overwhelming at times, but now I'm grateful for that. I also realize, I think like a lot of women who get older, that sometimes you discover that you and your opinions might be a little too much for some people, especially if you were once more careful about coloring in the lines. But coloring the lines were never, they're just a suggestion in many areas. I mean, there's things that are non-negotiable. We've been visiting, as we've been looking for churches, we've been visiting a church where we are saying the Nicene Creed every week. And I appreciate kind of those benchmarks, but though that's not the end, it is the end, and it is an orienting thing in my life, but there's great freedom to be able to hear and learn and listen from a variety of perspectives. And so,
yeah. Well, don't you think it remember there's a book a while back, Your God is Too Small.
Oh, yeah. J.B. Phillips.
Was it J.B. Phillips?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Well, I love J.B. Phillips. I love his translation of scripture.
Yes.
And I think that's true. When we have a small God that thinks when we think he's going to get angry if we explore something different, then we're really in jail. Mm-hmm. And then as a result of that, our Christianity is too small.
Yes.
And then we choose a church that's too small, and everybody's walking in lockstep with their tribe, whatever it is. And God forbid that you have a question and you raise it amidst the tribe, because you could get beat up.
Yeah. Well, and you stop raising questions because of that.
Right. Right. It's the unwritten rules that you kind of pick up from being in. I mean, it's true of every single group. It doesn't have to be church. You know, if you're in a workplace, you know, you discover that there's kind of social norms and things that people talk about and things that people do And it's okay to bring donuts, or it's okay to bring
it's always okay
hummus
to bring donuts.
Or what, you
not
know.
Hummus. Always good to bring
always
donuts.
Always okay for donuts,
donuts
not always
are
for hummus.
Always, yeah. Always in season.
Hummus doesn't get invited back in some
circles. I like hummus.
Me too.
I do. Not on donuts, though.
Not on donut day.
It's not the same. So anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks for kind of indulging me. I wanted to talk about the Christian mind piece before we moved on. But I want to move on to an article, Michelle, that you've written that was recently published online by Christianity Today. Which one of the streams was this
it's
a part of?
It's in the CT Women's okay. stream, but they link to it on the homepage at least for a while. I mean, until the next one by someone else goes up, but
and I'll have a link to the article. But the title of the article is "Your Peak Life Now: How to Face Career Decline with Grace and Faith." sounds like a real upper.
Yeah, come on, you guys, let's go get a donut.
The best.
Here we are at a 55 plus community. Yeah, so we're talking about this.
Oh yeah. The best way to prepare for our inevitable demise is a healthy focus on death, discipleship, and worship.
That's me, woo! Miss Sunshine. So, wow. Miss Sunshine.
So Anita, a few years ago, you were on 235 radio stations around the country, and now you're at your kitchen table,
yes,
talking to Michelle and myself.
Yes.
Well, that's not mentioning how many are listening.
Yeah. Well, that's right. It might be slightly smaller number, but the quality is that's much right. higher.
It's listeners. She's got great listeners. She's got great listeners.
She does have pretty awesome listeners. Yes. So,
but let's talk about this, because this is not a small thing, and this is happening in today's world, right? I want to know what got you going, writing on this. I mean, maybe it was just because you've been engaged in writing your most recent book manuscript.
I've been writing about midlife issues for more than a decade, because it kind of got me disoriented and confused when a bunch of kind of classic midlife markers, mm-hmm. deaths of parents, kids leaving the nest, a prodigal child, a relocation. There were a lot of changes in a short amount of time, and I kind of imploded. And when I looked to the church, I was working at a seminary bookstore at the time, so I had access to all kinds of great writing. I mostly heard from people that discipleship, you just do what you learned when you were a young believer and you do it till you die, and hopefully maybe you'll get a little bit better at it, and that should sustain you. Well, the practice is true, they do, but then again, the questions are really different. So it got me doing what I do, which is digging through the book stacks and looking for resources and talking to people, because I felt so confused, and seeing a counselor as well to process some of those losses. So I've been writing about it for a long time, and because of who I follow online and social media, I saw a bunch of people referencing an Atlantic essay by Arthur Brooks that was called "Your Professional Decline is Coming Much Sooner Than You Think." Nice cheery title.
Yeah, another upper there.
Yeah, okay. Well, Brooks was the president of think tank American Enterprise Institute, and so he's a research nerd and operates at a level that doesn't have much overlap with where we're sitting right now in Sarasota, but he had a lot of very good and profound observations, and I think because I saw a lot of people sharing this article, it told me that he was striking a chord. Mm-hmm. Yes. So,
and one of the things he talks about, at least I think as you're referencing in your article, the truth, and I have been guilty of this, So many of us anchor our identity in accomplishments, right? Mm-hmm. And so what happens when that goes away, when career fades, as you're talking about in the article, and as he talks about much sooner than you think, you know, what happens? How do we, as people of faith, move forward through that time? Because we can, I mean, we see it happen. I mean, it's interesting. You watch what happens to all kinds of people in the broader community, but are people of faith talking about this any differently than people who are you know, don't go to church, don't have a personal faith in Christ? Is it any different?
Well, I think you guys are both spiritual directors, so you are probably having those conversations with the people that you're mm-hmm. talking to. There are probably pockets in the church that are having this conversation, but we in the church are not. And Brooks points out in his article that I interacted with that most of us really, after age 50, in most cases, as a rule, we are in career decline. People see us. My husband's been looking for work. He's walking in the door as an older adult and immediately being diminished once they have a look at him as somebody who's older. We hear about this ageism. But it also just kind of happens that our productivity and our best growth happens, as Brooks noted, from ages 30 to about 50. And then we're starting to decline, but sometimes we're the last ones to get the memo.
Right. And we're the last ones to get the memo, and then we get it. Then the question is, and I think sometimes what people do is say, well, if I just search a little harder, whatnot, I will find that place that allows me to do what I'm really, really good at, mm-hmm. even at the age that I am. Instead of saying, maybe I have to set into a different category of person,
right?
You know, at a place. Let me, because I know pastoral ministry the best. I know that people are just looking for younger people. I get it. I understand it. They were looking at me when I was younger too, and I really appreciated it at the time. But now some of these folks in their 50s are really moving out of ministry. They don't know what to do. They don't know how to take the skills of ministry and apply it someplace else. And then there's so much competition. I mean, seminaries are still churning people out.
For jobs that don't exist.
For jobs that don't exist. And they got $100,000 in debt to do it, which is a whole other podcast.
Right.
So there's a lot of competition, and you're even seeing younger people that are saying, I can't get a job.
Well, I guess I want to interject into that, okay, there are careers that you kind of expect the young to be hired into.
Like maybe professional football player, yeah, maybe.
Like I am kind of thinking, yeah, you know, more physical sports kind of jobs, and not even just sports. But when I think of ministry, sadly, our culture has kind of taken over the thinking there. What I really want, but culturally what we're doing, are two different things. I want the person who has accrued age / wisdom. The two don't always go together, I'm here to say. Yes. But yes. I want that person who is wise, who has had life experience, who can be that type, that spiritual director type. That's who I want in these pastoral leadership roles. I want women and men in those spaces that are wise. I understand maybe, you know, the hiring of the 20-something, 30-something into the worship leader roles. Maybe that if you're in contemporary worship, you know, you know the latest, greatest way to play instruments or whatever. I don't know. But I still want a seasoned worship leader, not, you know, or the lead worshiper. I don't want a performer. And I think, you know, I don't want to even open that can of worms. But I just want someone who's seasoned. And honestly, there are many careers that are not attached to the church where equally, I want that seasoned person. And we just look for the pretty and the young.
Right, right. And I think Brooks offers a lot of kind of background. His article is a long read, and I link to it in my much shorter engagement with it. But he quotes a wonderful bit from author E.M. Forster in his piece. And the quote is, "Death destroys a man, but the idea of death saves him." And he puts this in the context of recognizing that our typical ways of coping with career decline and that sense of cultural irrelevance is not to try to run away from it. It's super uncomfortable. It's super confusing, but to actually face it. What is waiting for us on the far side of decline,
yes,
is death. And if that makes me a little bit of a Debbie Downer today, well, yes. But he suggests a number of kind of practices that will help us recognize before we crash and burn. You know, I mean, I see my husband struggling with this. I see a lot of older friends struggling with realizing that they're never going to be able to get back to that peak that they didn't even realize they were at, right, 10 years ago or 15 mm-hmm. years ago. But the answer or the antidote is there in the book of Ecclesiastes, which is to recognize that it kind of all is smoke, and not just an intellectual recognition, but to actually kind of go deep with the idea that nothing lasts. We see it when we're raising our kids. And just when you think you've mastered the terrible twos, the child turns three. Right. Then you have to start all over again, you know? And
well, and to quote you in your article, or no, that maybe you're quoting Brooks here, you know, this is the main message of Ecclesiastes in a nutshell. Life in God's world is gift, not gain.
Yeah.
That's
not
it.
Me. That comes from another writer that was super influential to me last year when I was teaching through Ecclesiastes.
Right.
This is an author named David Gibson, and his book is called Living Life Backward, which the title kind of tells you the orientation, and it really is the message of Ecclesiastes that our busyness, our success, those things that we use to form our identity are the bubbles that insulate us from the reality that we have to face death. And sometimes we zip right past Good Friday to get to Easter Sunday in ways that are not super
helpful
at all.
So. Yeah. You know, I wonder here as we do this, I think we're very good at just denying what's happening to us. Mm-hmm. We know it deep in our gut. And it's almost like the stages of grief when all of a sudden you know you're on the decline. Mm-hmm. And you say, well, I'm denying this. And I wonder what would happen to more people if they just said, this is the reality of my life. I cannot get younger. No matter how many hairs I dye, and how many facelifts I get, how many
rats.
Pounds
or hairs I transplant in some cases.
I'm 69 years old. I am there. So I can't deny that. And so I have to look at myself and say, well, my attractiveness to anybody else as might not quite be there. But instead to say, okay, instead of living in denial about who I am, what is the opportunity that God is opening up? And then being realistic about this. I mean, we moved down to Florida, so did you. We live in a manufactured home community. It's a lovely place. We really like it. I know for us, we have less money than we used to have. Yes. And
oh, yeah, but, you mean when both of us were working full time? Well, yes, exactly. Yeah, sure.
Yes, I mean very much. But instead of living in denial of that and spending at the same level that we did, maxing out credit cards, we had to come to grips with a new reality, take a look at a new budget, and then say, what opportunities can this provide us? And I think when we do that, then that's an on-ramp to the rest of your life. And I think what people do, they live in denial and they keep on trying to do the same thing over and over again, and it's just not working.
But I will say this, that I think if discipleship isn't there in the earlier part of life, then it gets harder to ask the right questions in later life. That's what I'm watching happen, and it's kind of distressing. Though I'm thrilled with the rate that people are now moving towards spiritual direction. I think they're seeing that, and they realize, ooh, I'm not asking the right questions and I don't have the right answers and I need help. I'm wishing that help had come earlier in their lives, in the life of the church. I feel like we've dropped the ball.
I agree with that. The challenge is that we can't do this in workbook format. And we can't have a small group and fix it.
I'd love to have a fill in the blank book.
And I wrote a book that starts with that premise. Like, this is to provoke discussion, not to give answers. I ask lots of questions because I have so many questions, so they just never end. And the point is to let those questions nudge us and to recognize that we are going to be in a place of great discomfort as we get uncoupled. Consciously uncoupled was the phrase I used in the original article. And the editor at CT was like, I don't know. I don't know if consciously uncoupled is exactly the phrase because of Gwyneth Paltrow, but I had fun. I had fun writing it anyway, and now I'm having fun thinking about it. But that we have to go through the process of saying goodbye to the old, saying goodbye to the vapor of our life, the vanity of our life, and it doesn't mean hair dye, although it can, but... And I'm speaking as somebody who's still dyeing her hair, but to recognize that we get to savor the sweet parts of our life by recognizing the counterpoint of the bitterness of the losses that we feel. They really are only sweet. If you ever watch the Food Network, and I kind of love the Food Network, the cooks who compete on various shows will often get slammed for not having balance to their taste, you know, whatever they're presenting to people to taste. If it's just all one note, too salty, too sweet, you know, you need some acid to balance that out. You need some lemon to balance out, you know, the sugar or whatever. So.
But we don't know how to do that.
It's uncomfortable.
Yes. But we should be doing it in faith communities, especially. We should be offering opportunities for people to think through that just a little bit. Mm-hmm. But it comes back to, are we willing to change our approach? Are we willing to change our outlook?
What's one thing that you would love to see a few churches, you know, small groups, adult ministry leaders? What's one thing? You're an ex-pastor with lots of experience. What's one thing that you could imagine that somebody could maybe begin to do? And it doesn't have to be a 10-week small group program. But
well, I think the best thing that they could do is start divorcing themselves or uncoupling themselves from the American dream.
Okay. So what would that look like?
Okay.
Well, I think to really talk meaningfully about what a life of discipleship means for us, in a country that believes that we're Americans are the exceptional ones and whatnot, what does it mean to live in a world early on where we're going to have to deal with having to deny ourselves, to take a look at things, to explore different kind of opportunities, to have different definitions of success. I mean, early on, that would really be a big help to encourage questions, mm-hmm. you know, not to shut them down. You know, when the person in the glass says, you know, really, I was at the Creation Museum, and I don't believe anything that they're saying. And the class gasps, and they said, you don't believe the world is a million years old, do you? Or how many is? Because we don't. It's only 6,000 years old. Well, that cuts things off. Mm-hmm. So I think what happens is, in a lot of our structures in our society, we're so good at shutting down people that we have to have almost this open statement policy when people come into a class saying, nothing is too stupid. No fear is too stupid to talk about. No nudging you're having is it's all worth talking about. I don't know if that makes sense, Michelle.
I think it does, but I think that the people holding the microphones have to do more of that. I mean, we're kind of, and I get it. I'm a writer, so I'm there writing stuff that can feel like I've got it all figured out. I don't have it figured out. I have questions.
Yes.
But we need to cultivate that. I don't know everything, and hard stuff happens in my life, and it leads me to more questions than sure answers.
I think, for me, I look at earlier life, and there were those moments, and anyone listening who may be in the thick of those years, 30 to 50, can relate to this, I'm sure. You're running at such a pace that you become exhausted. Mm-hmm. I wish when those moments come, and they do come, we wouldn't just, and sleep is one of the things we need, but we would do more than just that, that in our faith communities, there would be a response to that exhausted way of living, that there would be the teaching that would come, you know, whether in a class or a pulpit, to say, we don't have to live this way. Mm-hmm. Because I think that's the thought that needs to be encouraged and brought into the conversation a whole lot earlier.
Yes.
I love John O'Donohue, and I'm not going to read much, but I have one of his books, To Bless the Space Between Us, and one of the blessings is for one who is exhausted. And I've been reading it and thinking about it, and I loved this line. I've been sharing this with a few select clients, spiritual direction clients, who this really resonates with. You have traveled too fast over false ground. Mm. Now your soul has come to take you back. All right, what a line. This is, you know, just a two stanza.
Read that again.
Yes. You have traveled too fast over false ground. Now your soul has come to take you back. There's a whole lot more in there than just that line.
It's beautiful.
But, we don't... I pray indeed that our soul does come to take us back, that we don't keep going at that pace. But I wish we learned earlier in life that we need to engage in spiritual practices so that we don't continue traveling too fast over false ground.
And it helps if we can even just that, can recognize that for each other. We don't have to be a pastor to be able to say, instead of doubling down on your activity level, maybe you just need to rest. Let's sit and have a cup of coffee and a donut.
Hold on. This starts way before we're adults. We do this to our kids.
Yes.
We sign them up for every possible thing because we don't know how to be with each other, including be with our kids. Mm-hmm. We don't give them time to develop imagination. And so we pay for this later in life because, you know, maybe we were raised in that same kind of household. Mm-hmm. So we have not learned how to develop that. I mean, this is an ongoing system that needs to be dismantled.
Yes. You know, going back to the question you asked, Michelle, you know, about how do you teach, you know, this? And I remember for about 15 years, I taught divorce recovery. Three times a year, you know, and when you get people coming for a divorce recovery program, they're all over the map. And we used a Donald Miller video thing about story. Mm-hmm. And we said, you're really writing a book of your life. And we'd ask them to name the chapter that they're in. And it was always either sadness, anger, or hate. And we'd say, absolutely, those have to be written on. You have to talk about it. That's part of the stages of the grief that you're going through. You lost something. But if that's the only chapters you write at the end of your life, when your family looks back, the pastor tries to eulogize you, you know, you don't want him to say, yeah, she got stuck in sadness, anger, and hate, and it just began to show, and nobody ever wanted to be around her anymore, around him anymore. So, you know, if you begin with the end in mind, what do you really want your life to look like and define it? Then how do you go about writing some chapters that'll get you to that point? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a very mechanical kind of thing to do. But the whole idea, I know when I went through a divorce and realizing I'm just really angry. And that's not where I wanted to end it.
Exactly.
And so how do I write the next chapters of my life? So that's a part of it, but it comes off as a redemptive part of it.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that makes me think of is Gordon and Gail McDonald. For years, I had conversations mm-hmm. with them. And one of the things that stuck in my mind was the fact that they always would say goodbye or end your, you know, leave your job or your whatever when you're on top. And I think you, mm-hmm. this was mentioned in your article mm-hmm. as well, Michelle. I always appreciated that. And I recently, I think Gordon stepped down as chancellor at Denver Seminary. Right. And I remember Gail saying, you know, no, it's time. Things are going wonderfully well. It's time for someone new to step in. But boy, we are not fed that view. No. Milk it for all it's worth. And then comes the sad decline. No.
And sometimes you have to, because that's the only thing you know, and yeah, that's and the only job you have.
Right.
I get that, but it's not a thought that's been introduced to us as well.
No. They have one woman who commented on my Facebook page yesterday after I posted this article, said that she wishes that this conversation was kind of an ongoing and regular part of her work life. Even if she didn't act on the idea, just having the idea of knowing that there was going to come a time yeah. when it was time to say when, and that yeah. she could prepare for it. I mean, she did, but she said she wished that there would have been more front-end thinking, even if it just felt very theoretical, because people don't even talk about this.
Right. I think, that's the point, right? Yeah.
We just don't. And then
we're not saying this is
easy.
Yeah.
And, you know, instead of being able to recognize that we may need to offer up those peak parts of our career to God, that's what worship looks like.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just singing on Sunday mornings. As a matter of fact, that's a really, really tiny sliver.
Yeah.
But to say, I'm going to offer up this part of my work life, even though it means that relinquishment, like it's already happening, you know, before I even recognize it. So. It's a conversation we're having in my house, and I've had lots of many, many, many jobs, and I've been pretty terrible at most of them. So
that's hilarious.
Relinquishment was not so hard because I was pretty bad at them. But
and also,
not
I
a
think
great resume builder.
Yes,
there,
oh, right? It's a long resume, but not great.
I also think this may be easier for our kids. We're in a generation that, had jobs for 30, 40 years, you know, stayed in careers, which I think makes some of this even more difficult.
Right.
Right. So I think it could be easier for our kids that kind of hop around. I don't know. Who knows? But one of the things that we're doing today, at least I hope, is posing questions that you might grapple with. That's the desire. And I would love to hear from you. We would love to hear from
you. Yes.
You can email producer@anitalustria.com, producer@anitalustria.com, or you can just go, you can go to the website, anitalustria.com, and there's a contact tab. But yeah, would love your thoughts. I mean, some of you have lived through this. Some of you are thinking about this, or maybe this is something new that's now on your radar and you're thinking,
sorry,
I need to be considering this.
Not sorry.
Yeah, exactly. Michelle, thank you so much. Thanks for your writing and for being part of this thoughtful conversation today.
Thanks for being our new neighbor.
Yay! I know. Won't you be our neighbor?
Ooh, I'm excited for that movie that's coming out.
Yes.
Tom Hanks. Yes. Thank you. Mike, thank you again for joining me at the microphone. It's always great to have you a part of these kinds of dialogues as well. So thank you.
You're welcome.
And to everybody else, I always say it, I'll say it again, keep the conversation going.